All right, so, hi everybody, welcome to Lecture 19 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. Today we're going to pick up where we left off yesterday. Yesterday's theme was the mystery of the pyramids. Today we are going to talk about the meaning of the pyramids, or the mystery solved, which is to say. And so we are, of course, looking at the pyramids very closely. They act as a kind of historical lens from which we view Egyptian culture because of the nature of these objects, especially as historical artifacts. So they are these colossal archaic engineering achievements. They were the tallest buildings on earth for 4,000 years. They were constructed using blocks of up to 150 tons. And they were the product of the labor. Each one was the product of the labor of as many as 100,000 men working for 20 years. So these colossal structures are just absolutely the perfect anchor fact of Egyptian history. They are, which is one way of putting it, or another way of putting it would be the perfect gateway into the archaic history of Egypt, the perfect symbol of archaic Egyptian culture. And we talked about this yesterday, but I really want to drive home the point. And I would really want to make sure that everybody here can articulate why the pyramids are basically the beginning and end of Egyptian history. They are, I mean, yes, we need the Rosetta Stone, in order, and you know, that's an anchor fact in its own right concerning archaic Egypt. But the truth is, the ultimate anchor fact of archaic Egyptian history is the pyramids. So, and this has to do with what Kenny was briefly just chatting about earlier, which is our connection, right, to the ancient Egyptians. So, I want to make sure everybody is okay with this and is able to, in their own words, articulate this point. So, why? Why are the pyramids the ultimate anchor fact of Egyptian history? Why are they the absolute best symbolic existing artifact representative of Egyptian culture? Why? Theo, get us started.
Well, the Egyptians built them an extremely long time ago, and they're still around.
Okay. All right, so their survivability or their persistence, the fact that they continue to exist to this day, right, is certainly an aspect of the connection. So our connection is visible, right? The fact of the persistence of these artifacts is definitely an aspect. Okay, but their persistence is not the fundamental aspect in the sense that, you know, it's a function of the fact of how they were constructed and what that act of construction tells us about Egypt. That is the crucial thing to grasp. So, Kenny, what did you want to say?
Well, it's just, like, we're fascinated, like, how the heck do they do that with the technology at the time,
mm-hmm.
and why that shape?
Okay, very good.
Why, and how?
Yeah. Okay. Good. So, in other words, the pyramids lead us to this whole spectrum of questions, right? We want to know more because certainly they have this geometric beauty, right? This simplicity, this elegance in terms of the shape. So that, of course, leads to the many questions that you're bringing up. Okay, that's good. That's good. But here's the point that I haven't heard yet is, why are they such a powerful symbol of Egypt? That's the question that I want answered here. Why are they such a great artifact In terms of, you know, you could get lots of different kinds of artifacts, but the pyramids are like the best you could ever want. Why? Why are they so good, Abby?
Well, one of the reasons is because they kind of, they are a symbol of ancient Egyptian culture.
How?
Because they symbolize it because the Egyptians would build the pyramids for the as tombs. And the pyramids, they weren't just any tomb. They had all kinds of extremely valuable belongings, gold work.
Okay, wait, I'm going to stop you there because you're going down a track that's not that productive. This is a good adjunct piece of information. In other words, it's one of those things that also is good, but we haven't yet hit on the thing that's the most important. So we got to be careful about focusing on peripheral truths here and get to the heart of the matter. So again, the key point is why are the pyramids so great as an artifact king?
So they're so great because they tell us about what the ancient Egyptians valued, and they are still here. You know, the primary thing is that they tell us what the ancient Egyptians' values were, what they valued most.
Okay.
They're still here is a factor of that, but it's also nice that we can actually see them and know about them in the present day, and we don't have to rely on history.
Okay.
To know about them.
Okay, we're getting closer. They tell us about what the Egyptians valued. Now, we can express human values in different ways, okay? We have different types of value judgments that we enact as human beings. There's a type of value judgment that says X or Y is good or bad, okay? That we call a moral value judgment, okay? So if you steal from somebody, we condemn that as morally bad. Okay, if you produce some great life-saving medical technology, that's morally good. Okay, that's a type of value judgment, moral value judgments. But actually, the kind of value judgment that we're talking about here is another sort. Okay, the pyramids do tell us about what the Egyptians thought was good or bad, but kind of indirectly, they tell us more about another kind of value judgment. And that is the kind of value judgment that is inherent in historical thinking. And I've stressed this point so many times. Every time I say to you guys, important is the most important word in history. Right? When we study history, we're looking for the most important things. The pyramids tell us what the Egyptians thought was important. Okay, that is the thing that's like this massive transmission beacon that says 4,000 years later to everybody everywhere, this is what we thought mattered. This is what we thought was important. This is what we dedicated ourselves to. And that's why they're so great, because you see, I mean, we don't always, as far as a historical artifact is concerned, because we don't always have that. People aren't always capable of creating things that enshrine or that are infused with that much cultural significance and have them survive for all time so that we can see it. Right? So this, I mean, it really doesn't get any better than this, because these monuments, in terms of the sheer amount of dedication, the sheer amount of attending to this issue that they embody, reveal the heart of Egyptian culture. They reveal the thing that was on their minds. The thing that they were really, really focused on. So that's why they're such a powerful symbol and such a great anchor fact. You couldn't ask for more, because in what culture? I mean, do we even have another example of a work in which of an artifact like this in any culture that took 100,000 men 20 years to construct? Is there anything comparable anywhere else? There are just a very, 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 very few even comparable objects. I mean, the only one I can think of would be the Great Wall of China, which was built over generations and generations. I don't know what the stats are, because I don't know if any statistics were kept or transmitted or what have you, but that's a monumental accomplishment, right? And that tells us that the rulers of China wanted to keep the Mongolian barbarians out. But that's about it. You know, that doesn't tell us, you know, that much about the Chinese. It just tells us about one of those, the great challenges of Chinese civilization was that in the heart of it, in what they call the Middle Kingdom or the Central States, they had to worry about security and they were surrounded by lesser peoples and they wanted to keep them out. Okay, that's not that deep of a revealing fact. Is there anything else that compares to this? Well, we have pyramids in Central America as well that are quite revealing. They're not as spectacular as the ones in Egypt. Some of them technically are larger, but in most cases they were built on top of big mounds of earth. So they were kind of cheating when they built them. Cheating is not the right word, but if you're taking advantage of the natural formations of the earth, whereas these ones really are built from the ground up. Again, that's very revealing. Those pyramids in Central America also reveal a great deal about what was important to the people. And a striking similarity exists, of course, between the two cultures. Kenny, go ahead.
All those are big landmarks in architectural smarts and how the communities that were the different empires and kingdoms and stuff, how they could work together to make these awesome buildings and stuff.
You're absolutely right. So do you want to extend that theme to any other culture? How about modern culture?
Well, we also take a lot of architectural things from, like, Egypt. Like, I believe in Vegas there's a, like, glass pyramid.
Okay, that's okay, but that's really exceptional, right? If you look across every American city, what do you see?
You see some little bit of different culture from all around.
I'm talking about the blatant thing. I'm talking about the thing that jumps out at you about every American city. What is the architectural feature? Right? That characterizes modern cities. Keen? The skyscrapers. Right? And this is why the attacks of 9/11 are so deeply symbolic as well, in case you hadn't thought of it. I mean, the terrorists who flew the planes into the World Trade Center, that was deeply symbolic for them. Because the World Trade Center were these colossal, geometrical basic shapes, weren't they? I mean, think about it, the pyramids, basic geometrical shape. The World Trade Center, gigantic rectangular shapes. And they were always so staggering to me. Every time I would visit New York back then, and I would be coming in on a bus or driving a car or whatever, and you would see them, and they were just so staggering in their scope. And they represented more than anything else how great New York was, even more than the Empire State Building, because they were taller, and there were two of them, and they're just staggering. Skyscrapers today are deeply symbolic, and corporations use them as icons, you know, to represent their brand, and cities, you know, really want taller buildings to represent them. So you go to a place like Hong Kong, you can really feel the economic power there, and in cities like New York or Chicago, and you see the big skyscrapers, and it really symbolizes the level of economic activity of that city, how important that city is. And by contrast, you go to a small city and, you know, everything's pretty stout. Everything is pretty short by comparison. And there's just this aspect, a symbolic aspect of colossal engineering works. And we see that in the form of football even in the football stadiums nowadays, are considered these symbolic, structures for cities. If you're going to get the Super Bowl in your city, that's like a big deal and stuff like that. Architectural works are really, really symbolic of cultures. Absolutely. These ones, though, I mean, there really is no comparison, though. I don't think there's any engineering feat that more distinctly symbolizes a culture in world history than the pyramids. You basically can know everything you need to know about ancient Egypt by understanding the pyramids. So that's why it's such a potent fact. And why we are definitely going to use the construction of the pyramids as an anchor fact concerning Egyptian history. We know Egyptian history starts circa 3000 BC. So of course we're going to be curious to know, well, when were the pyramids built there was in fact an age of pyramids for about 500 years, of which am I showing you my screen or not? No, I'm not. Somehow I got out of that. So let me go ahead and share my screen. So there was this age of pyramids in which these were constructed, that really was the peak of Egyptian culture. That's why we're going to study them. So let's get to this point now, a follow-up point concerning the pyramids, because we're only halfway towards understanding these pyramids, because we have said that the pyramids were tombs. Okay, if that's what we've got, we've only got half of the meaning. The essence of that is that the pharaohs died, their bodies were then mummified, and rituals were performed, and they were deposited in the tombs, and it was then believed that based on various forms of magical incantations and rituals and so on, that the pharaohs would then ascend to the heavens. All right, so we have the idea of death. We have the idea of the afterlife. This is certainly key. Okay, we can't figure out the Egyptians without that. They're sincere. They're really, thoroughgoing concern with the afterlife is a symbolic feature of their entire culture. But it's not the only thing. Because think of it this way. If you were a pharaoh and your entire priority was the afterlife, you believed that all of these rituals that you're going to perform, right, and that your body has to be in the tomb and it's surrounded by these wonderful objects and, even vases full of food and water and magical creatures that will come alive and protect you and all kinds of things. It's a very, very ornate ritual surrounding your ascendance into the heavens. Right? You believe that. Okay, so then tell me this. What would your design of the tomb be if that was your unadorned priority? How would you design a tomb if the afterlife was your sole consideration? Architectural pop quiz. Abby, go ahead.
I don't know the details of how I would design a tomb if the afterlife was my sole consideration, but I do know I would make it very grand and very...
Would you really? Because grandeur is a this-worldly quality. So now I'm going to challenge you on that one, right? In fact, I think you would do the opposite. Juliet?
Well, I think... Sorry, I think steps would be important. Steps to heaven.
All right, so you're talking about... But do you get to heaven by climbing a stairway? Like, literally? I mean, you could symbolically kind of say, all right, the stairway is symbolic. Okay? But you know full well that it's not your physical body that's going to heaven. So, all right, isn't that kind of dispensable? Can't we move on from that? How are we going to build this, Theo?
Well, I would make it super hard to find, but with a lot of nice stuff in it.
Okay, why would you make it super hard to find?
Well, then no one could, like, steal from it.
Okay, because you are engaged in this great ritual that has to be this uninterrupted, you know, process where you're going to go to heaven, right? And so you don't want anybody messing with that. Right, so your point is that, in fact, if you were to think about a tomb and its purpose, in purely in terms of the supernatural, then you would want it to be actually so that nobody could see it. Because you wouldn't want anybody in this world interfering with that. Kenny, what do you think of that?
Well, I think that the reason they're triangles, perhaps, is because, like, they'll be beamed up to heaven or something.
Well, yeah, you can kind of get the notion of the kind of symbolic thing where they're pointing to the sky, although they didn't have a big light like the one in Las Vegas at the top of it. But yeah, I get your points about the symbolism here. Quite a few people are focused on the symbolism of the rising kind of pyramid and so on. It's actually more a feature of the architectural limitations of the Egyptians than anything else, but kind of a combination of things. But does everybody get my point that if your priority was exclusively supernatural, then the worldly qualities of your tomb would be nothing to you, right? If your value judgments were exclusively supernatural, then you would actually want a tomb that is featureless. You would want to go and dig a hole in the desert and put your tomb down in the depths of it and then cover it so nobody else could see it or ever find it. And that way, your future, you know, supernatural existence is assured. Right? Because nobody in this world is going to mess with that. They won't even be able to find it. So, my point is here, I'm trying to drive home this idea that if it's exclusively supernatural, then you're going to have a certain emphasis. But the pyramids are not like that. By the way, later on in Egyptian history, that's what the pharaohs did, by the way. If you didn't know, that's what they did. They dug holes in the ground, they hid their tombs. So, I didn't come up with this all on my own. It's not just my own invention. This is actually what they did. And which is why nobody found King Tut's tomb until 100 years ago. Think about that. I mean, the King Tut's tomb was hidden for more than 2,000 years. And it was supposed to be. Nobody was supposed to go in there. Nobody was supposed to ever get it, you know. Disrupt it. So that's what they started to do later on in Egyptian history. The pharaohs started to hide their tombs. So how come they didn't do that from the start? And so it has to do with this thing that we haven't yet put our finger on, which is the nature of the pyramids. Okay, and my hint to you is the nature of the pyramids was not exclusively supernatural. Right? Here you are. Here's a great photograph, right? This is mundane Egyptian life. Maybe a fisherman going up and down the Nile way back then. And what do you see every day of your life? You can't help it, right? I mean, it's in your face every day, Theo.
These giant pyramids that people built.
These giant pyramids rising up out of the desert, always just these blatant, you know, extremely visible symbols. And consequently that you can't help but look at them. You can't help but see them. They're there every day as a daily reminder. So in other words, the pyramids had a very worldly purpose. The pyramids had a this worldly purpose. Right? They weren't just tombs. A tomb is more, you know, okay, it's your dead body. So if you're going to look at it that way, then basically you may as well just dig a hole in the ground and put the body in the hole. And you put a gravestone. I mean, in our modern society, that's what we do. You know, we have these cemeteries and you put the body in the ground and that's kind of one approach. On the other hand, you know, here we have these tombs that are extremely visible and meant to be seen. So these are not just tombs, right? Because they're meant to leap out at you. They are meant to conjure this significance within the day-to-day life of Egyptians. So what do we call that? What kind of object is this? What would be a good word for that, Theo?
A monument.
Monument. Very good. Right. Yeah. So the pyramids are, I like to say, I use a hyphenated term to kind of capture that. They're monument tombs. I guess you don't have to use a hyphenated term. You could say monumental tombs. But then what you'd be saying is that they are fundamentally tombs and not monuments. Is there an adjective for tomb? So you could then argue, well, maybe they are tumul monuments. I don't know. So I'm not going to place a grammatical prioritization on it. I'm just going to say they were a double, you know, featured object. They were monument tombs. Remember how we studied European history a few years back, and I used to tell you guys about the bishop princes, right? So they were both in German feudalism. So we have these hyphenated terms. So same kind of thing. I think of the pyramids as monument tombs. So they were tombs, but they were monumental. And now let's think about that, okay? Again, because what is the purpose of that? Well, let's chew that a little bit here to make sure that we can mentally digest it. Why the monumental quality? What does that reflect about the culture of the Egyptians? Kenny, go ahead.
I think that they were, the pharaohs were trying to be like, look at me, I had all this power.
Okay.
So powerful.
Yes, the aggrandizement of the pharaohs was certainly an aspect. Now, everybody's got to make their own kind of judgments concerning how much of that aspect, you know, again, the monumental quality, is that the most important thing? Is it kind of an expression of the power of the pharaohs? Are we going to be cynical and say that the religious dimension was all just made up so that the pharaohs could have as much power? Or did they really believe it? You know, that is always going to be pretty much an impossible question to answer. But yeah, I think that's a fair guess in terms of what was their mindset concerning the pyramids. They were definitely trying to be like godlike, right? And separate themselves from everybody else. Okay, Juliet, what else?
I think they wanted to be remembered.
Okay. All right. Now we're on to something there too, right? So it's kind of a matter of a legacy. It's a matter of, again, something to attend to on a daily basis. The Egyptian people would look to that. The Egyptian people would be reminded of it. And the point here is the connection between the natural and the supernatural. Kenny was talking about the, you know, kind of like the shape of the pyramids and how you can kind of imagine the spirit of the pharaohs being beamed up into the heavens, kind of like the light at the top of the pyramid in Vegas just shoots up into the sky. You can see it from the space shuttle or from the International Space Station, though. Kind of symbolic type of a shape, which you know, probably is an aspect of the construction. But in terms of, you know, what they were meant to do, they were meant to just inject this humongous daily reminder of the connection between the natural world and the supernatural world. You've got the heavens, you've got the earth, you've got the connection through the pyramids, you have this colossal monument that says the pharaoh's dead bodies are in here, but their spirits have risen to the heavens, right? And from there, they are watching over us, and life in Egypt is, in some sense, you know, controlled or regulated or otherwise manipulated by this connection, affected by, conditioned by this connection. The natural world, and, you know, in the typical conception of the supernatural, that term super has kind of a double meaning. It's over and above the natural. It's when you have this idea of the supernatural, the supernatural is always kind of the more important part of the two. The ultimately kind of controlling feature of the two. And so the pyramids are there to remind everybody that the world is the province of the Egyptian gods, and that includes the pharaohs. And how could you doubt that, right? I mean, unless you were a highly skeptical, ancient, archaic Egyptian person, how could you doubt that? I mean, look at them. You couldn't explain that in any other way, in a kind of traditional sense. Rosie? Louder, please, I can't hear you.
So most Egyptians, so like the pharaohs would have the pyramids, but where would like the normal people who work for them usually go?
If you had, you know, if you were a slightly less important person, like a queen, you would get one of these. And if you were anybody else, you would get some lesser version all the way down to the bottom, in which you're going to get a hole in the ground like pretty much everybody else. So yeah, nobody thought that, you know, the passing of a peasant was of any galactic significance. So there were definitely a very, very pronounced hierarchy in terms of how the Egyptians viewed the world. The pharaoh was way, you know, way beyond everybody else. Certainly in the theoretical or the purely formal aspect of the religion. Yeah, so from a modern day perspective, you know, this is a kind of a good point to emphasize, because nowadays, you know, the leaders of the world, the president here or there in the United States especially, right? I mean, he's a citizen. He's elected, and then he steps down and he goes to his private life and so on, and he's just a person, right? So this is quite a pronounced difference in terms of the social structure of society. So that's an interesting point. Now let's go to this connection between the supernatural and the natural world. And it, like I said earlier, it's always going to be an interesting puzzle when it comes to a religious belief, how people, I'm going to use the word internalize that, if you get my point. In other words, if you have a religious belief, what is it that it really means to you personally? It is really going to be this internal issue for you, right? For each person, it's going to have a certain quality. For each person, it's going to have this internal quality to them, and you can't know that, right? What the one person's belief is versus another. You can see how they act in life. You can see, you know, what their rituals are and so on. Okay, but ultimately, it's really internal. So I can't speak to whether or not, you know, Kenny was making the point where the pharaohs, if we take kind of a cynical view of the pharaohs, we might say they were just power lusters, and their internal state of mind was that they used religion as a way to have power over everybody else. And certainly we can find many examples of people like that in history. On the other hand, we can also find examples of people in history that are absolutely, completely religious. Okay, and whether you're talking about hermits living in the desert, and various characters kind of like the church fathers in Christianity and so on, who and people who will flagellate themselves and all kinds of really, really extreme religious ritualistic behaviors. And you have to take seriously that for that person internally is just a really deep, profound dedication to that premise, to that belief. So anytime we're looking back at people and wondering what was going on in their minds, we can't really know for any particular individual. But we can see, kind of in aggregate, that there was this huge commitment on the whole level of the civilization to these monument tombs, and then we read all the texts, we read all the documents, and we see this enormous focus on the interaction between the natural and the supernatural worlds. So, that being the case, we have to, my default approach to that is to take it seriously. They meant what they said. They meant what they did. So in that, if we think about Egyptian life that way, rather than try to find any kind of clever, conspiracy theory or other sort of thing, underlying it all, it's pretty obvious the way that the Egyptians thought of themselves and of the world. And I think that when you ultimately add it all up, it's by far the most plausible, by far the most, I mean, it's obvious, and it is entirely logically consistent and satisfying an answer when we look back on them. So, that what was this connection that they were so focused on? It was so important to them. Well, it has to do with this. It has to do with the nature of life in Egypt. Herodotus, the Greek historian who had so many interesting things to say about Egypt, he called Egypt the gift of the river. And the point is that for primitive people, life was so absolutely dependent on what nature provided. We live in a time when, given our technological advances, right, if we want water, we can desalinate the oceans, right? So all of you who are in California are going to be doing that pretty soon instead of certain other things. So, we can pretty much, human life can be supported anywhere on Earth using modern technology, from the Antarctic to the deepest desert. And so we know how to do this given our technology. But in primitive times, human beings were absolutely dependent on nature. And nature had created a very wonderful, unique circumstance here in Egypt in the form of the Nile River flowing down to the from the highlands in the Central Africa over thousands of miles to its opening here, and human beings could live there. The circumstances were just fantastic relative to anything else. Overabundance of water that would allow you to grow all the food that you needed. And so this was just the perfect place to be. But they didn't understand anything about this world. They just happened to live there. They got lucky, and then they did what they could with it. The thing about the Nile was that every year, and this was just a fundamental rhythm of Egyptian life. Every year the Nile would flood. So if we kind of take a cross section or look down the Nile, you kind of think, imagine being there. Here's a photograph of life along the Nile. Right, you've got this river and it's flowing at a certain rate. And then once a year, for a period of about 100 days, the level of the river would rise. It would rise to here and then to here and then to here, right? You can see kind of the way, you can always tell in a river valley kind of the different levels that the water can reach based on the different effects that you can see on the terrain. And as you can see here along the Nile, right, you've got this incredibly verdant region that is just lush, right, with crops. And it's obvious to understand how that comes about, right? The water is right there. And in ancient times, the river would climb up to this level and inundate this area, and it would deposit a layer of soil, and then it would retreat, and you'd plant the crops. And basically, you know, you had this perfect situation for growing food. And then you can see here kind of the village, the huts and everything along the side of it on the really, really dry portion that's higher and higher up, right? And this was kind of the fundamental feature of Egyptian life, just in terms of its kind of basic sustenance of life. Just about everybody was a farmer along the Nile. And I mean, that's what you had to do, because back before the Industrial Revolution, it was hard to sustain human life. There wasn't enough food. It was very easy for circumstances to lead to starvation in a variety of ways. And so this was an amazing setting to promote human life. It was just a kind of a wonderful rhythm and very kind of easy circumstances for people to be able to do basic agriculture. Now, but the Egyptians didn't understand why life was like this. It just was. It just was. So this is where we get to this theme that we're going to have to follow up on tomorrow, which is the connection between the natural and the supernatural. The Egyptians didn't have a scientific outlook concerning a river like the Nile. They didn't have the ability to conceive of what a river was, how it was formed, and why it would flood, and so on. So they didn't know. It didn't even occur to them to think of such questions. So what we'll see is that based on a more primitive mindset, they viewed phenomenon like these as supernatural. And here we get to the connection again between the pharaohs and the supernatural world and the natural world. They viewed a phenomenon like the Nile, the gift of the river, as a gift of the gods. And so now when we combine those two ideas of the pharaohs and their kind of supernatural nature, their supernatural aspect, and then we combine that with the fact that the supernatural world, the world of the gods, governs the natural world, which most importantly means the Nile River, then basically you really get to this sum, which is the fact that all of life revolves around the supernatural rituals that sustain the natural world. Okay, so we'll come back to that tomorrow, and we'll look at Egyptian society, kind of how it was structured, and the pharaohs at the top, and the premise of the Nile River and of Egyptian religion and so on, and the whole kind of hierarchy of society and how life worked, and where that's going to take the Egyptians. This is how we understand. If we grasp this, we'll understand why did the Egyptians build 100 pyramids. How did their society, you know, place an emphasis on something like that? Then later on, we'll be challenged with the interesting question, why did they stop? Because ancient archaic Egypt is a 3,000-year civilization. How come they stopped after 500 years? No more pyramids after that. Rosie, did you want to try to answer that or guess what it might be or speculate? Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say was that they could take as long as 20 years, and like, if they couldn't make that many in 500 years, and they were taking so much time that I think after a while, and also things, they were getting robbed a lot.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about that, right? So you have to think about why, you know, tomb robbing, which is, you know, a commonly understood thing in later Egyptian culture, why that would be culturally significant. And so that wouldn't necessarily lead them to stop building pyramids, but it's a kind of a trigger for a change in behavior. It didn't stop them from being very otherworldly in their focus, but it did contribute to them rethinking the design of the tombs. And so on. Right? So yeah, we'll have to talk about how Egyptian history unfolded, basically. All right. Well, we'll get to that. All right. So anyway, that's good for today, though. All right. So we've got the meaning of the pyramids. We have this essential connection in the values, the value judgments of the Egyptians, right? Their understanding of the world, their picture of the world was this connection between the supernatural and the natural world. We'll pick that up tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
You bet.